Live from the ESPN Pensacola studios, it's The Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass. You could be a part of today's show by texting or calling at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
You know, that's above my pay grade about if Mike is coaching again next year. But, you know, all coaching aside, coaching, you know, Mike can leave and go wherever he wants. But the guys I kind of feel bad for is guys like Zach Martin and guys who might be on their last year or on their way out, you know, because that's who I wanted to hold the trophy for. You know, you want to win games and do great things with those type of legends who put in more time and work than Mike McCarthy ever did. So those are the kind of guys that I have so much sympathy and hurt for.
And that, of course, is Dallas Cowboy linebacker Micah Parsons and the comments he made yesterday morning that have really taken the sports world by storm. Lots of people really debating and talking about those comments, and was it disrespectful to Mike McCarthy? Was it kind of reading between the lines of what's to come with Mike McCarthy? And we'll talk about that coming up in just a second right here on The Glass Half Full. But before we get to that, do want to welcome you into today's show and let you know that if you want to be a part of the show, you want to comment on the situation with Micah Parsons, you definitely can do so on the text or phone line, 850-623-1330. Again, that is 850-623-1330. It's those comments definitely are interesting. When you sit here and you listen to them, I think I get and I understand where Micah Parsons is going. I think Micah Parsons is simply trying to say, from a player's perspective, from a player's standpoint, I care more about getting those guys a Super Bowl. Because those guys have earned it. Those guys have worked their tails off to get to a Super Bowl. And, you know, he's a player, so he understands the hard work that goes in as being a player in the National Football League. I do think that there were some shots there at Mike McCarthy that were a little unnecessary. Honestly, I do. I think that there were some comments that were made there that didn't need to be made. The comment of, so the way that the question was set up to him was asking, well, because it's in Mike McCarthy's final year of his contract with Dallas, you know, what is your thought process? What is your thinking heading into the final parts of this year with him and his final contract with the Dallas Cowboys? And so I think that's where, at the beginning, Micah Parsons is like, look, Mike McCarthy can go wherever he wants to and coach wherever or whoever he wants to. I don't think there was anything wrong with that. I think the disrespect for this came at the end when he makes the comment about those players have worked harder than Mike McCarthy's ever thought of working, or whatever, however it was he put it, you know, in the exact phrase. That is disrespectful in itself, because Mike McCarthy is a guy who works his tail off. Right? It's not like McCarthy is phoning it in this year. Mike McCarthy, even when he was done at Green Bay and he spent that, what was it, one or two seasons where he wasn't a coach, he still was watching film. He was breaking film down. He was learning the new styles of offense that were coming into the NFL. He was learning the new styles of defense that were coming into the NFL, so that when he did get another coaching job, he knew what was new in the game and he would still be up to date. So even with this man unemployed by a team in the NFL, he was still working his tail off. So for Micah Parsons to make that comment, yeah, it's a little disrespectful. It is a little disrespectful. However, I do understand where Micah Parsons is coming from. Coaches come and go. Teammates stick around, right? How many times have we seen a team go through a coaching change and those same players are still there the following season, right? So I think what Micah Parsons was trying to say is, look, my brother's on this on the team, you know, we're a family. Mike McCarthy can be here next year or he can be somewhere else. That's above my pay grade. That's not a decision for me to make. And he's absolutely right. That's not a decision for him to make. I think the point he was trying to get at was, I care about the guys in this locker room. My brothers on this team, my brothers that are family to me, that we go out there and we go to war with each other each and every week during the season, I care about those guys. If Mike McCarthy is here next year as the head coach, then cool. That's the guy that we'll play for. If it's going to be somebody else, then we'll play for somebody else. I get where Micah Parsons is coming from, but he just – I think in this situation with him and making this comment, the best thing for him to have done was to just plead the fifth. Just plead the fifth, because there is no answer to the question that was given to Micah Parsons. There is no answer that works, right? There is no answer that is going to come across in a positive light where nobody is going to come away from it without having an issue. There's always going to be somebody, if you answer that question straight up, there's always going to be somebody that finds something to nitpick about. So I think for Micah Parsons in that situation, man, you just keep your mouth shut. And, of course, we're talking about the comments made by Micah Parsons about Mike McCarthy here on the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. I get it. He's trying to take up for his teammates. He's trying to talk about his teammates in the locker room and how that's what he cares more about. He's focused on trying to win and help those guys get a Super Bowl before they retire or before they leave and go somewhere else. I get it. But when you make comments like he did about Mike McCarthy in that statement, people are going to take it the wrong way. Because right now, especially with what I do, as a sports talk show host here on ESPN Pensacola or all the way up to Stephen A. on First Take, anybody in between there, we are all trying to find some little tidbit or something to talk about as far as Mike McCarthy and the Dallas Cowboys, because right now we're just waiting for that other shoe to drop and we're waiting for the Cowboys to announce that they are going to fire Mike McCarthy or that they're not going to renew his contract for the 2025 season. We're just waiting for that announcement to happen. So when Micah Parsons makes these comments, we are going to latch onto it. We are going to latch onto it and suck it dry like a leech. And that's exactly what a lot of people are doing. I don't think Micah Parsons meant anything negative with these comments. I don't think he meant anything derogatory with these comments. I think it was just a situation where he maybe necessarily didn't think through what he said. And now you've got a lot of people that are breaking it down, trying to figure out what he meant by this, what he meant by that. And I think it's become a little bit bigger than what it was. Was the comment he made at the end a little disrespectful towards Mike McCarthy about how hard Mike McCarthy's worked? Absolutely, yes. But I think to Micah Parsons, what he was trying to say is that there's a group of guys in that locker room that work their butt off each and every week trying to win games, trying to win a Super Bowl, and those are the guys that he's looking out for. Those are the guys that he's worried about. He'd give a hoot and a half who his coach is next year. Mike McCarthy, Bill Belichick, somebody else, who cares? He's looking out for the guys in that locker room that he goes to war with each and every week. Again, I get what he's saying. Just could have been delivered a little bit better. It's ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. This is the Glass Half Full with me, Jordan Glass. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you want to be a part of today's show, text or call 850-623-1330. Again, it's 850-623-1330. Monday Night Football last night, the Dolphins finally breaking a three-game losing streak with a 23-15 win over the Rams. Dolphins last night probably the healthiest they've been all year, including week one. Because really, they came into this season pretty banged up, but they were pretty healthy last night. They had Tyreek Hill, who was a game-time decision. He came out, warmed up, and decided he was good to go with a wrist injury. So he ended up playing, ended up scoring a touchdown for him as well. Tua just continuing to look pretty good coming back from that injury. Another big week for him, 20 of 28, 207 yards. Threw for a touchdown that passed to Tyreek Hill, I just mentioned. And he did throw an interception in this game. Matthew Stafford in this game, 32 of 46 for 293 yards and an interception of his own. I think the real story coming out of this game, though, is Miami's defense. Really, a week ago, we talked about after the Buffalo game, Miami's defense was the reason they lost that game. Their offense set them up with every opportunity they needed to win that football game on the road in Buffalo. But when the defense needed to get a stop and get the ball back to the offense, they just could not do it. They just couldn't do it. And last night, you saw a different Miami defense. This defense really kind of locked in, and they kept the Rams out of the end zone. And despite the fact that the Rams are 4-5, and I know a lot of people are going to look at that and they're going to go, ah, that's a bad football team. No, that's a good football team. That's a good football team in the LA Rams that's just had a lot of injuries, right? Cooper Kupp has been unhealthy a good bit of the year. Puka Nacua has been out with injuries a good chunk of the year, right? They have been losing and missing a lot of their key guys throughout the season. And that's going to affect the way things go for you. But last night, the Dolphins defense did a great job of keeping the Rams out of the end zone, forcing a couple of turnovers. They had a fumble and an interception. And more importantly, forcing the Rams to be 0-3 in the red zone. I think that's really the telling thing here is the Rams were 0-3 in the red zone and had to settle for field goals on multiple occasions. Multiple times, they are down in the red zone and the Rams just could not find the end zone. It was a bend but don't break mentality for the Dolphins last night on defense, and that was a big part of why they win. Because, I mean, if you look at this, if the Rams can convert in the red zone, they have 21 points. There's a very real chance that if that happens, or even they just convert two of their three opportunities in the red zone and make them touchdowns, there's a very good possibility that the Rams win this game at home. Should have been 14-10 at the half in favor of Rams, but instead it's 10-6 Dolphins because the Rams could not score a touchdown. This was a very poorly played game by the Rams, especially in the red zone. Aside from the bad red zone play and the turnovers and having to settle for field goals, six penalties for 64 yards. That also hurt the Rams in this game. Six penalties for 64 yards. And a good bit of those penalties kept drives alive or killed drives. A couple of times they had the Dolphins stopped. And a penalty gives the Miami Dolphins a first down. And that drive goes on and the Dolphins go and get points. You can't do that and allow this offense to have free yardage and move down the field. Because right now this Miami offense is starting to catch a little bit of a rhythm, right? They're starting to get production from Jalen Waddle. They're starting to get production from Tyreek Hill. They're even starting to get production from Odell Beckham Jr. as well. The last couple of weeks, he's had a couple of crucial catches for them. This Miami offense is starting to gain a little bit of momentum and rhythm at the right time for them. So when you are giving up six penalties for 64 yards, if you're the Rams, you can't do that. You can't allow them to continue on a drive when you get them off the field. And then when you get the ball in the red zone, you've got to score points. So when I look at last night's Monday Night Football game, two things that really stand out to me: the defensive performance by the Miami Dolphins, and then just the overall just bad performance by the LA Rams. It was just not a good game for the Rams, period. Whether it was turnovers, whether it was penalties, whether it was not being able to convert first or third downs or not convert in the red zone, whatever it was. Because here's the thing. The Rams led in about every statistical category that matters. The Rams led. But it was because of the turnovers. It was because of the fact that they had to settle for two field goals in the first half and three field goals in the fourth quarter. That's the reason why the Rams lost this game last night against the Dolphins. If they are able to punch it into the end zone, they have a very, very good shot at winning at home. But they couldn't do that. And now they're 4-5. The Dolphins are 3-6. And here's the thing about the Dolphins. They're a lot better than their record shows, right? I think this is a better football team than a 3-6 record. They are actually one game out of a wild card playoff spot right now. With that win last night, they are one game out. This is kind of the weird. This is how weird of a season the Miami Dolphins are having. If they would have lost that game last night, they would have had the third overall pick in the NFL draft. right? They had been picking at number three. But with the win, they are now one game out of a wild card playoff spot. That's how weird and crazy of a year the Miami Dolphins are having. And if this team continues to play better on defense the way they did last night, if this offense continues to put it together and continues to get production from Jalen Waddle, from Odell Beckham Jr., from the running back crew that they have, from Tyreek Hill, if they continue to do that, if Tua continues to be accurate and smart with the football. I look at their next two games. They play two games at home coming up against the Patriots and the Raiders. Those should be wins. That should bring the Dolphins back to 5-6. And then they go on the road against Green Bay in a game that, honestly and truthfully, let's be real, the Dolphins have the talent to actually go into Green Bay and beat them. It's just depending on what Dolphin team are we going to see. The last 3 weeks have been losses before this game have been losses for the Dolphins, but they've been a loss of a touchdown, 1 point, and then 3 points to Buffalo. They've been close the last 3 weeks. They just have not been able to get it done. The Dolphins look like they're turning the corner in that game last night. And if they do turn that corner, their last nine games, they should be favored in at least five, maybe six of those games. And even the ones that they won't be favored in, they still can have an opportunity to win. I think they still can have an opportunity to go into Green Bay and get a win in 3 weeks. So watch out for the Dolphins. This could get very interesting with them moving forward. I don't think they win the AFC East. Buffalo's already beaten them twice. I think they're just in too big of a hole. Short of Buffalo just absolutely collapsing, which I don't see happening, I think the Miami Dolphins are going to be pushing and playing for a wild card spot. And how many times under Mike McDaniel have we seen this team rattle off 7-8 wins in a row? If they do that to close out the back half of this season, all of a sudden this Miami Dolphins team, who's had an abysmal start to the season, will be a playoff team. And we all know in the NFL, all you have to do is get into the postseason. Weird and crazy things can happen in the postseason. All you got to do is get your foot in the door. So we'll see how this plays out for Miami. And honestly, the Rams are in the same situation. If the Rams can do a better job of limiting the penalties and actually converting in the red zone and scoring touchdowns rather than field goals, if the Rams can do that, they're sitting right now at 4-5. They're kind of in the same position. I don't think they win their division, but the Rams can easily be a wild card playoff team. So for both of these teams, everything's still out in front of them. They just got to win. That's it. Just got to win. Real quick before we head to our first timeout, Kyle Shanahan squashes any concern over the sideline altercation between 49ers players following their win on a Sunday over Tampa. Debo Samuels got a little frustrated, went over to Tabor Pepper, who's the long snapper, and Jake Moody, who's the kicker. Moody had missed three field goals in that game on Sunday. Debo's a fiery player, and that's how he leads. He leads with fire and passion. So he went over there and was just kind of, you know, trying to motivate, trying to lead, but it comes off looking a different way. Kyle Shanahan's come out and said, the locker room's good. We're good. Those guys aren't mad at each other. There's no animosity there. It's really a non-issue moving forward. So Kyle Shanahan says it's not an issue. I will believe it's not an issue. Again, Debo Samuel's just one of those fiery leaders, and I honestly and truthfully think that that's all it was. He was trying to go over to the long snapper and the kicker after a rough day for them, trying to get them back on the same page, get them back focused and motivated, and trying to get them moving forward and forgetting about this game. And it just came off looking completely different than what it actually was. I don't think it's a big issue. Kyle Shanahan doesn't seem to think it's a big issue. So, I say we leave it here and we just move on. Now, if there continues to be issues on the sideline with Debo Samuel, then, yeah, you might want to look into that. But it one-time thing, wash your hands of it. Move on. We'll take our first time out of the show. When we come back, we will have more The Glass Half Full right after this. Going to talk a little college football playoff rankings. The new round of rankings come out tonight. We'll talk about it next, coming up right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM.
Hey, if you own or manage a business in the greater Pensacola area, how would you like to get your business in front of men ages 25 to 54? Well, that's who listens to ESPN Pensacola.
Hey!
Okay, men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah.
Excuse me?
And Jill. Whether it be a radio ad with ESPN Pensacola or online through ADX Digital, we can come up with the best solutions for you. Get in front of men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah and Jill.
Woohoo! Yeah!
Just go to our website, ESPNPensacola.com, click on the sales opportunities.
Mike Greenberg, weekdays 9 to 11, right before the Rich Eisen Show on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM.
It's the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Welcome back in to the Glass Half Full. It is 9:24 here on this Tuesday morning at ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. You want to be a part of today's show? Hey, you can do that. Text or call 850-623-1330. Again, that is 850-623-1330. Getting back into it now with some college football playoff rankings. Obviously, the new rankings come out tonight after a little bit of a surprising weekend in college football with some upsets with Georgia Tech over Miami. And, yeah, we can classify Ole Miss over Georgia as a little bit of an upset there. But I thought it'd be fun to kind of take a look at some of the things that we could potentially see as things that plan out and things that matter for tonight's college football playoff rankings. Real quick, first and foremost, how do those losses, right? How does Georgia Tech's loss or Miami's loss to Georgia Tech, how does that affect the playoff ranking? How does the Georgia loss to Ole Miss affect the playoff ranking? I kind of talked about a little bit on yesterday's show. I don't see it affecting Miami as much as it could potentially affect Georgia, simply because it's Georgia's second loss on the year. So because of that, I could see it being a little bit more of an issue for Georgia than Miami. Miami dropping just a 9-1 after that game. But just running through some of the results from their weekend real quick. Oregon at number one in the college football playoff ranking. They moved to 10-0 with a 38-17 win over Maryland. Ohio State 8-1 with a 45-0 win over Purdue. Georgia falls to 7-2. Miami falls to 9-1. Texas moves to 8-1. Penn State moves to 8-1. Tennessee moves to 8-1. Indiana is 10-0 with a win over Michigan. So I don't want to hear that they haven't played anybody yet, and I don't want to hear that, oh, well, Michigan's not that good of a football team. Michigan's still a quality football team, and they took it to them and got the win there to move to 10-0. BYU is 9-0. Depending on who you ask, if you ask Utah fans, if you ask the Utah athletic director, BYU is 8-1. But literally, logistically, they are 9-1. Oh, Notre Dame 8-1, Alabama 7-2, and Boise State 8-1 with their win over Nevada this past weekend. So really, not a lot of change outside of Miami and Georgia there for the top 12 teams. For me, I'm looking at this and I'm trying to figure out where Miami and Georgia might fall to. I could see Georgia probably is going to fall down. I would think Miami's probably going to drop down to around 7 or 8. Georgia will probably drop down. I think you've got to move Alabama. I think you move Notre Dame, BYU, Indiana. I think you move them up a spot. I think you actually move Indiana up one extra spot. I think Miami's right there around that 8th spot. Putting them ahead of an undefeated BYU. Then I think you have an 8-1 Notre Dame team. Then I think you have 7-2 Bama. Then 7-2 Georgia. Then Boise State sitting there in that final spot for the college football playoff at 12. So I definitely could see Georgia still staying in the top 12, but maybe going back down to where Alabama was this past week, right there on the cusp at number 11. And then Alabama bumping up to probably about 9 or 10 at 7-2. So I don't see Miami or Georgia being bounced out of the top 12 after their losses. Both losses, 5-point loss to Georgia Tech. not really a it's not a good loss, but it's not a terrible loss. I don't think it's a loss that's bad enough to drop Miami completely out of the top 12 altogether. And then also, look, even if it does, if you're a Miami fan and you're listening to this right now and you are knocked out of the top 12 altogether tonight, you still have an opportunity to play your way in. You still have an opportunity to get into the conference championship game. If you win the conference championship game and you're 11-1 in the regular season, I don't see a way you are left out of the college football playoff top 12. I don't really see it. So despite the upsets over the weekend and how shocking they were to see it happen, I just don't see the Georgia Tech loss for Miami being something that is really going to be too detrimental to them. And then same for Georgia. Georgia still has an outside shot at getting into the SEC championship game. So I think that, you know what, run the table, win the conference championship, and you're in. Right? It's a little bit different from Georgia. I think Georgia would really honestly benefit from winning the conference championship more than, you know, you look at Alabama with the same record as them at 7-2. I think for Bama, your best path is to not go to Atlanta. I know Alabama fans, you like winning championships. You like dominating in your conference and all that stuff. So you're going to want to go win the SEC championship game. I get it. But honestly and truthfully, again, like I said, I think your best bet if you're Alabama, just beat Oklahoma, beat Auburn, let somebody else win the SEC championship, and you get into the college football playoff, right? Don't risk that opportunity, because here's the thing. If you go into Atlanta, if you're Alabama, and you go in, let's say you're 10-2 on the year, and you go into the conference championship game, and you're playing, let's say you're playing a 11-1 Texas, and Texas beats you in the conference championship game, there's a very real possibility that you actually get left out of the college football playoff for just playing in the conference game and losing it. So that's why I say for Alabama, just win out in the regular season. Don't worry about the conference championship game. If you do that, you're going to be in. Georgia, I think, needs the help. I think Georgia needs the help because Georgia just – the thing about Georgia was they looked really bad that first half in their loss against Alabama. And honestly and truthfully, Carson Beck struggled once again this past weekend against Ole Miss. These are going to be things that the committee looks at and takes into account. So I think Georgia needs to finish strong. I think Georgia needs a dominant win over Tennessee. I think Georgia needs to close out with a win over Georgia Tech. I think they need to go on into the conference championship game and win it in a convincing way, especially if they can go up against Texas again and we get a rematch and it's a similar score than what we had before. That is definitely going to bolster Georgia to get into the college football playoff. I think that's got to be the path for the Bulldogs. It has to be. Of course, we're talking college football playoff rankings. The new rankings come out tonight right here on the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola. How about can Ole Miss leap into the top 12 after their win over Georgia? I think they can. I think they can. But it's going to be very interesting to see how the committee does it. Do they leave out? And there is kind of a guideline and a byline there in the college football playoff rules that would allow another Power 4 school to possibly replace a G5 conference champion. So does Boise State get knocked down a peg to 13 and Ole Miss jump into that 12 spot? Right? It's going to be very interesting to see how the committee handles Ole Miss and their justification for it. That is definitely going to be one thing that I am really going to be wanting to see tonight. And when we hear from members of the committee on the selection show, you know, after they reveal it and then they talk to certain members, certain people with the committee, I'm really going to be curious to see how they talk about Ole Miss, how they justify the moves that they make for Ole Miss. Because again, Ole Miss is kind of one of those teams right now that's it's a toss-up. Ole Miss could be in the top 12 right now, or they could be right outside it looking in. But I think, again, if you're Ole Miss, you have the same thing that Bama does. Just win out. You don't have to play for a conference championship. Just win out. I think if you win out, you can be just fine. So my thing with Ole Miss is it's going to be very interesting to see how the committee places them and the reasoning behind where they have them placed for sure. If you want to be a part of today's conversation about the college football playoff ranking coming out tonight, you can definitely do that. Text or call 850-623-1330, 850-623-1330. All right, here on the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Real quick before we head to break here, one last thing I want to look at as far as the college football playoff rankings is what conference has the opportunity to get multiple teams in, right? I think there are really only two conferences that have a legitimate opportunity at truly getting multiple teams in. You look at the Big Ten right now, Oregon, Ohio State, Penn State, Indiana. Indiana and Ohio State are getting ready to play each other soon. I believe not this Saturday, but next Saturday, they will play each other in Columbus. So that is going to be a very telling game, not only for a spot in the college football playoff, but a spot in the Big Ten championship as well. Because right now, it's Oregon and Indiana in the Big Ten championship. And if Indiana goes into Columbus and knocks off Ohio State, then they're going to have an opportunity to play Oregon for the conference championship. And I think really, honestly, and truthfully, in that situation, if you have two undefeated teams in the Big 12, both of them will get, or excuse me, in the Big 10 championship game, both of them will get into the college football playoff. I don't see one being left out over the other just for losing the conference championship. I think you'd have Oregon. I think you'd have Indiana. I think Penn State, if they can win out, they'll be a one-loss football team. If Ohio State does drop a game to Indiana, you would look at it on the year. They'd be 10-2, but their two losses would be, let's say it's a three-point loss to Indiana in overtime or something like that. Then you have a three-point OT loss to Indiana and a one-point loss to Oregon earlier in the season on the road in Eugene. I don't see the committee keeping a 10-2 Ohio State team out if that's their two losses. I really don't. So there's a real possibility where the Big Ten has four teams in. The SEC could even be more than that. You got a one-loss Texas team. You got a one-loss Tennessee team. And then you got a group of two-loss teams behind them in Georgia, Alabama, Ole Miss, and A&M. Now, A&M and Texas play each other to end the season. An A&M loss there pretty much knocks them off of this list. But Ole Miss, their schedule the rest of the way is very favorable. Georgia does play Tennessee this weekend, so it is going to be a very interesting ball game there. If Tennessee knocks off Georgia, that's Georgia's third loss. I think Georgia is out. They get knocked off this list as well. If Georgia beats Tennessee, then that is going to cause a little bit more chaos, and then suddenly Tennessee is going to have to join the ranks of the two-loss football teams. But they're going to stay on this list. Texas will have to play, like I said, A&M to close out the season, and then they'll have to play one of these teams in the conference championship game. So there's chances for cannibalism inside the SEC. So right now when you look at it, I have four teams for the Big Ten, and I have six teams for the SEC. But honestly and truthfully, with some of these teams in the SEC playing each other either in the regular season or for a conference championship, there's going to be opportunities for some cannibalism happening there inside the SEC. So really, honestly, and truthfully, I think when it's all said and done and we get that final college football playoff ranking, I think the SEC is looking at more along the lines of having three teams in. So I think you'll have the Big Ten with a great opportunity at four teams. I think the SEC is probably going to be right there around three teams. Maybe could get a fourth team in right there in one of those final spots. But I think they're going to be right there. Three teams is that sweet spot for them. The ACC, they've got SMU, Miami, and Clemson. SMU right now, 8-0 in ACC play. They are the favorites in the conference right now to get to the conference championship game. Miami and Clemson are kind of fighting it out there for that number two spot to see who would play SMU. And the thing about SMU is they are going to score points on just about anybody they play. And if they play this Miami team in the ACC championship game with the defense that Miami's put on the field this year, SMU should win that conference championship. I think Clemson is actually the better matchup to SMU because Clemson does tend to play a little bit better defense. And notice the keywords there, a little bit better defense than what Miami has so far on the season. So I think Clemson and SMU would be a better matchup in the ACC championship game. We'll have to see how it plays out. If Miami wins out and doesn't get into the conference championship game, oh yeah, absolutely. They're 11-1. they're in for sure. SMU, if they went out and win the conference championship game, they're 11-1 in the regular season. They've won the conference championship. They're in for sure. Clemson, again, kind of along those same lines as a Georgia. I think they kind of need to get to the conference championship. Now that they have two losses, I think they need to get to the conference championship and actually win the conference championship in order to bolster their opportunities at getting in. The Big 12, BYU is pretty much their only chance. Let's be honest. BYU is pretty much their only chance. Colorado is kind of on outside looking in. Colorado has to win out, have some help in order to get them to the conference championship game, and then win in the conference championship game. So there's a lot that Colorado has to do, and there's some help that Colorado needs in order to put them in a position to where they could possibly get into the conference championship as a two-loss conference champion. So I think BYU, that's the only team for the Big 12. Independent, obviously it's going to be Notre Dame. G5 conference champion, that highest-rated conference champion from the G5. You've got Boise State sitting there right now at 12. We'll still see if they're right there around that spot when this ranking comes out tonight. And then Army, they just did nothing but improved to 9-0 on the season with a win this past weekend as well. But again, I just don't think Army's getting the respect that they deserve, and rightfully so. I mean, Boise State's got the resume, right? They went to Autzen Stadium, played Oregon close and only lost by 3. So I think really that loss for Boise State is actually what's giving them that heads up over an undefeated Army team. We'll take a timeout. When we come back, we'll have more of the glass half full right after this.
Paul Feinbaum on weekday afternoons after the Rich Eisen Show, 2 to 6 on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM.
It's the glass half full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Welcome back into the glass half full, 9:43 here on this Tuesday morning. I got to shift gears now, and we're going to talk about something that's a little heavier than what we normally talk about here on the glass half full. I'll tell you what, before we get into that though, let's go ahead and get into some of the programming notes we have for you coming up here on ESPN Pensacola, including tomorrow we'll have Tomahawk Talk from 9 to 10. Then on Thursday we'll have War Eagle Weekly from 10 to 11. Then we'll also have some Thursday night football for you as the Commanders take on the Eagles. We'll have Westwood One's coverage of that game. Friday at 10 a.m., we will have Roll Tide Radio. You definitely tune in for that. They'll talk about all the latest in Alabama football. And then coming up on Saturday, we've got a couple of college football games for you. As at 10:30, we'll start with the pregame show for Utah and Colorado. So the Utes taking on the Buffs. Coach Prime, Shador, Travis Hunter, all of them going to be right here on ESPN Pensacola. You can hear that game again, pregame for that starting at 10:30. 5:45 on Saturday evening, Will Kennedy will have the pregame for UWF at Valdosta. Big game there for our Argos. A win there. They are in the playoffs. As a matter of fact, the rankings came out yesterday for UWF. Right now, UWF is in the postseason. UWF is in the playoffs. If the playoffs were to start this weekend, the Argos would be in. They have a tough game on the road against Valdosta State. I believe UWF is ranked 8th, and Valdosta is number 1. So right now, if it is a close game, back and forth, close game that, you know, the Argos just can't seem to pull out at the end, maybe lose by, you know, 3 points or 4 points, something like that, there's still a good chance that the Argos can still make it into the postseason. But really, your best bet, beat Valdosta on the road, and let's set up for a great opportunity in the postseason. So we'll have, again, pregame coverage of that game with Will Kennedy starting at 5:45. Kickoff for that game coming up at 6 o'clock on Saturday night. Getting back into the show here, though, if you haven't heard what's been happening at Florida outside of the football program just becoming a dumpster fire, the basketball program's not that far behind it. And it's because Todd Golden is currently under a Title IX investigation, and this is why I say it's a little heavier than what we normally talk about. There are going to be some things in here that are going to be said. So if you're driving around right now and you have a child with you in the vehicle, maybe you know, just be cautious on this topic as you listen. But apparently this all started a couple of months ago. September was when the accusations were filed with Title IX. And the accusations include stalking, cyber stalking, sexual exploitation, and sexual harassment by Todd Golden, who is the head men's basketball coach at the University of Florida. The investigation actually lists two staff members as being involved. It doesn't say who the staff members are, but it does say that they played some type of role in this. Some of the allegations among Golden, unwanted sexual advances towards women. It does include UF students, by the way, asking for explicit sexual favors, sending unrequested pictures of his genitals. Also is alleged to have stalked women in person, sending women photos of themselves he took in public, attending locations where he would encounter them, and online by using social media likes and follows as a means of getting their attention. None of that is okay. None of that is good. And the thing about Title IX, usually if a Title IX investigation happens and there's no merit to what this person is being accused of, 9 times out of 10, you don't hear about it because they do a good job of keeping Title IX under wraps, right? They do a good job of keeping Title IX under wraps as they're investigating. Now, if they go through the investigation process and they start finding evidence and it starts looking more and more like what they're being accused of and the allegations are actually true, then that's when you start to hear news reports about that Title IX investigation, which is why this does not bode well for the University of Florida. It does not bode well for Todd Golden. Because here's the thing. If he is found guilty of half of this stuff, just half of this stuff, he needs to be gone immediately. And honestly and truthfully, if I'm Scott Strickland, I would not have let him coach last night against Grambling. I wouldn't have done it. Would not have done it. I would have said, look, man, you're on leave until this investigation is over. It's a bad look for us to continue to roll you out there week in, week out, and let you continue to coach with these allegations against you. I'm not sitting here saying you're guilty. I'm not sitting here saying that you're innocent. What I'm saying is, until this investigation is over, you need to kind of take a step back. We'll let one of the assistant coaches handle the coaching duties until you are able to come back or until the results of this investigation prove that we need to terminate your employment. Because it's not a good look for him to still be on the sidelines for Florida basketball with these allegations out here. Like, are you kidding me? First of all, sending pictures of your junk is just, yeah, that's bad enough. Let's be honest about that. Then you throw in the fact that he's following them to events that they would be at just so he can bump into them, or he can take pictures of them at these events and then send it to them. Bro, that's weird. That is weird. It's invasive. It's creepy. And it's not okay. And like I said, when you start hearing about allegations and Title IX investigations, usually that's because they found things in the Title IX investigation. They've been investigating this since September, right? So for 2 months, 2.5 months, whatever, this has been being investigated under the radar. And now all of a sudden things are starting to come out. And like I said, whenever you have this being the case with a Title IX investigation, chances are it's one of those things where there's smoke, there's fire. When you hear about a Title IX investigation, there's usually a reason you hear about it. I think it's ridiculous that Florida still had Todd Golden on the court last night. I think it's a slap in the face to these women who filed these allegations against him. And it's a slap in the face to people who have had to go through this before. And this is not, and here's the thing, and this is where it gets deeper at the University of Florida, because for Scott Strickland, this is not the first coach he's had that has been in this type of situation before. Former soccer coach Tommy Amato had to be fired in 2022 for widespread player mistreatment during his only season in the program. Apparently, he was making comments about players' eating habits and body shapes, and was being abusive in verbal and physical ways. Former women's basketball coach Cameron Neubauer, another Scott Strickland hire, had to be fired in 21 for creating a toxic environment and verbally abusing players 6 weeks before his departure. There was a mountain of internal allegations against Neubauer and a handful of complaints of players to Scott Strickland, right? Parents of these players for Neubauer went to Scott Strickland saying, "You're the athletic director. This is happening to our child. Please do something about it." Scott Strickland did nothing. Scott Strickland, when knowing what was happening with Tony Amato, did nothing until it became a story. So if it comes out here in this situation that Scott Strickland knew about what was going on with Todd Golden but did not do anything about it until it became a Title IX investigation, until it became a national headline, not only does Todd Golden need to lose his job, but Scott Strickland needs to lose his job as well, because that would be three instances of head coaches being abusive in some way, shape, or form to players or students or just females in general. And Scott Strickland know about it and turning a blind eye. It's unacceptable. It is unacceptable. And it's disgusting. I know, due process, we've got to wait and see what the investigation pans out to say. But I'm telling you right now, in my years of doing sports broadcasting, and I've been doing this for almost 10 years. It's crazy to say that, but I got my first start in sports talk radio in 2015. In that time, any time a Title IX investigation has been brought to the surface like this has, there's been a reason behind it. Where there's smoke, there's fire. We'll take our final time out. When we come back, we'll wrap things up with your headline roundup right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM.
Hey, if you own or manage a business in the greater Pensacola area, how would you like to get your business in front of men ages 25 to 54? Well, that's who listens to ESPN Pensacola.
Hey!
Okay, men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah.
Excuse me?
And Jill. Whether it be a radio ad with ESPN Pensacola or online through ADX Digital, we can come up with the best solutions for you. Get in front of men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah and Jill.
Woohoo! Yeah!
Just go to our website, ESPNPensacola.com, click on the sales opportunity.
Monday night, Thursday night, Sunday night. 318! This is your home for every primetime NFL game. ESPN Pensacola.
It's the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Wrapping things up here on a Tuesday. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Glass Half Full. It is time for your headline roundup, where we take a look at all the top headlines in the world of sports. The Miami Dolphins break a three-game losing streak with a 23-15 win over the LA Rams in Monday Night Football last night. Chicago Bears fire offensive coordinator Shane Waldron following their three-game losing streak. Scapegoat season has started in Chicago. That is not good news for Matt Eberflus. He's usually the next one on the chopping block once the coordinators don't work out. Todd Golden, we just talked about that a little bit, continues to coach for the Florida Gators despite being under Title IX investigation for sexual harassment, sexual exploitation, stalking, and cyber stalking. Former USC and Rams coach John Robinson passes away at the age of 89. Cleveland Cavaliers move to 12-0 with their Monday night win over the Chicago Bulls. The Cavs become one of only eight teams in NBA history to start the season off 12-0. The last team to do it was the Golden State Warriors in the 2015-2016 season. And Shohei Ohtani, Francisco Lindor, and Aaron Judge are among finalists for several Major League Baseball awards. That is your headline roundup. A couple of other things we're keeping an eye on in the world of sports. Nico Imeliave. I know I've not been able to say that correctly all season, so I'm just going to stick with calling him Nico. Nico looks like he's going to be healthy and ready to go this week for the Tennessee Volunteers as they will head to Athens to take on the Georgia Bulldogs. Definitely is going to be a big factor to have him in there if you're Tennessee. If he was not playing, I don't know if Tennessee would have had an opportunity to win this football game on the road in Athens. I think another key for Tennessee, other than having Nico in the game, their defense has got to start strong. You can't have a lull early on like we saw against Alabama or like we saw against Florida, where you allow them to kind of run out in the second half. You got to be right off the bat. Put your foot down on their throat and don't let it up. Put Carson Beck in a situation where he is forcing the ball, creating mistakes, creating turnovers. That is going to be your best bet to win this game. I think if Tennessee can win this game, they should go on to beat Vandy. A lot of SEC conference championship game and playoff implications on the line in this one. And Ole Miss fined $350 for storming the field. Hey, fans, quit running on the field after your team wins. You're costing the university a lot of money, especially when you do it too early, Ole Miss fans. You cost them another $100,000 just for being on the field with 16 seconds left. That's going to do it for today's show. Greeny, coming up next.